Right, I'm here with Miss Laura Schreiner and, Mrs. All right. So let's just start at the beginning. Where were you born and raised? Or where were you born at?
Born in Nebraska in a little Danish community called Dannebrog. Mm-hmm. Only had about 350 people. Half were Lutheran and half were Baptist.
Wow. And what year was that?
1936.
1936, okay. So half were Lutheran and half were Baptist. What was your early childhood like? Were your parents influential in bringing you to one of these two communities, Baptist or Lutheran? Did you have any siblings? I mean, what was your childhood like,
okay,
and specifically your religious?
My childhood was quite austere. We were on a farm in the sand hills of Nebraska, so it was very difficult. And my father came over from Denmark. He was a Lutheran from growing up in Denmark, and came over here during the time when there was famine over there. But he was a very, very staunch Lutheran. He was what they called the sad Danes, where their faith was what they used to survive. And they really found not a whole lot of joy in it, because they felt that, well, whatever happens to me is God's will, and if it's bad, okay, that's the way God wants it to be. But I always like to say I was conceived a Lutheran, because it was very, very much of what we grew up, and we went to a little Lutheran church there in the community, and they were very strict. We could not dance, we could not smoke or any kind of alcohol, and definitely not play cards, because the cards really were a tool of the devil. And so we would go to church on Sunday mornings and Sunday school. And then I think my father was maybe one of the early ecumenistic people, because then in the evening we went to the Baptist church, because we loved the gospel songs they sang over there. We were kind of a musical family. And then I always knew that probably in the middle of the week, the Lutheran pastor would be out to see my father. And it never failed. On the Sundays that we went to the Baptist church that week, the Lutheran minister came out and scolded my father for letting us go. And he was sure we were on the road to hell.
So your father was, as you said, more ecumenist. He was much more, I suppose, liberal within that community.
I think so. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And what about your mother? How was she?
I don't know, because my mother died when I was 3 months old. So I have no, but I'm support. I'm sure that she would have supported my father. She came from the same area, Denmark, that he came from.
Well, can I ask you a little bit more about that? How did the circumstances of your mother's death, because I'm sure that affected your father's religious perspective in some manner.
I don't know how much detail you want, because I
can
go into great detail.
You can go into as much detail as you'd like, or of course this is your history, so you can leave as much out as you'd like.
Okay. Well, living out on the farm in the wintertime in 1936 was a very difficult life. And there was no electricity, so when it came time to do like the laundry, it was gas-powered motor. And it sat out on the porch, out in the open. And this was in February of 1936, so it was pretty cold. And in order to get that motor to really take off and run, my father had in the past warmed the gasoline that he used in that washing machine. And he always set the can of gasoline in a bucket of water. Now, I don't know why he felt that that would kind of insulate it from any explosion or anything like that, but then he'd bring it in and set it on top of our wood-burning cook stove. And this had worked forever and ever, but at this particular day there was a crack in the ash door, and as he brought the can of water with the gasoline inside down off the stove, I guess the draft of the motion sucked the fumes of that gasoline in through that crack, and it exploded. And so that caused the death of my mother and four siblings. And my father survived, even though he was the worst burned. And for the first year, according to my older sister, she would hear him get up in the middle of the night in crying and praying to God for strength to endure the loss of half of his family. He never blamed God, but he always found support in his faith in God. And yet he felt that God had permitted this. He never really felt that God willed this to happen, but he permitted it to happen. And I don't think he ever really came to understand why, even though the people in the town blamed him for their deaths because they felt that this was a rather unthinking thing to do, to warm the gasoline. But that's what they did. They had to do these things to perform daily chores and living. And I don't think it made him any... It changed. I don't think it changed his faith in any way, but of course I didn't know him before like my older sister would have. But afterwards, he was always very firm in his faith, but not radical. Not angry with God, not demanding, although there were very strict rules in how we lived our lives. And yet there was this other side of him that also allowed him to say, well, let's go to the Baptist church and enjoy that music. Because the Danish Lutheran music was very somber. Remember, this was the Sad Danes, and it was very somber. And I don't remember too many songs that were praising God. You know, a lot of them talking about the difficulty and sadness of life. So,
and this was all in Nebraska, correct?
Right.
So when was it that you came to Kansas?
I came to Kansas in 1958 as a new bride, and I have lived here ever since then.
Where did you move to specifically in Kansas in 58?
To Wichita, not all that far from where I live now. I pretty much live in the same side of town.
And where did you find a religious community, or how did you settle in?
Well, when I was a student nurse in Grand Island, Nebraska, which is just about 25 miles from where I grew up. It was a Lutheran church that my older sister attended, and that's where I was married also. But it was English Lutheran, not Danish Lutheran, so it was a little bit different in the way it approached the Lutheran faith, in that there was a lot more joy, a lot more joy in the worship. And when we were moving, the pastor recommended this church down here, which was a German Lutheran. So I made the rounds a little bit, and now I belong to a Swedish Lutheran church. And, you know, I've always just been a Lutheran, never thought about going to other churches, yes, but never attending a Lutheran church. When we were in the military and in Arlington, Virginia, we attended a Missouri Synod Lutheran church. But I must say, at that time, I really didn't think much about the differences. It was Lutheran. That was good enough for me.
And do you think that was primarily because your father raised you in partial Lutheran circumstances?
Oh, very much so. And back then, we really did not challenge our parents' beliefs or challenge the way we grew up and were taught. This is what I was taught? Okay. I'll accept that. And it worked for them. It's working for me. So there wasn't much challenge. You just pretty much went with what you grew up with.
So what church did you join here when you said that there was it was English Lutheran, and then, well, the Missouri Synod Lutheran was in Virginia, you said, right?
That was the Missouri Synod Lutheran. Well, and another thing that drew us to the church in Wichita, along with the one in Grand Island, they had the same name. Both were St. Paul Lutheran churches. See, and so if it's the same as what we have known, that's good enough, and we kind of went along with it. And it was a very good church. It was an old church, old community of faith.
So you say you joined up at St. Paul's in 58, but right now you're a member of Gloria Day Lutheran Church. How did the change come about, and when did that happen?
Okay, well, we left St. Paul's because, you know, any time you have a, a group of people together, you're going to have differences of opinion. Mm-hmm. And things happened, and they seem not to be heading in a direction that we felt the Lord would want his people, the church, to do, like reaching out to the poor. And I was beginning, I think, to feel drawn to the needs of poor people. And that church was situated in a part of Wichita where there is a large Hispanic community that were kind of new to America and very, very needy. But there were also members of that church, older people who had built that church and felt that church belonged to them, that did not want poor people in there. Mm-hmm. And so there was a church on the west side of Wichita that was just beginning, meeting in a school. And in fact, our son and daughter-in-law were attending it. We thought we'd like to just stay together, and our grandchildren were with them. So we went out there with them. And stayed long enough to build a new church and be part of that founding congregation. But then again, this pastor out there had no Christian education for adults. Mm-hmm. And as Lutherans, Christian education is very, very important. That's part of the thing that Martin Luther really strove for. And so we felt, well, no Christian education for adults. We need to find a place that has one. And we knew a lot of people already that were here at Gloria Day. So we came here and liked it, and the outreach of the congregation to new members.
Okay, and when was that you joined Gloria Day? Do you remember the year?
Yeah, I believe it was 1999.
Okay, so pretty recently.
Right.
Okay. All right. So since you recently joined, what was it between the years of 1958 and 1998, I guess, that period of 40 years, roughly, besides your interest in social justice and certain pastoral perspectives on that issue and how it really didn't fit with what you wanted from a church or what you perceived the church's role to be, were there other things, certain books or persons or just ideas or personal views that affected your decisions to change groups in general? I'm sorry, that's a long question. In general, what has affected your changing perspective on religion?
Well, probably a most outstanding experience, well, maybe two small experiences that occurred when we were in South Carolina in 1959, really kind of influenced the direction and my thinking about life issues and what was maybe important to me as a person. Mm-hmm. And the first one was when we came to Columbia, South Carolina. Your grandfather was newly drafted into the Army. And as a nurse, it was basically up to me to find a job to keep us going. And the days went by. Now, as a nurse, you're supposed to be able to find work anywhere. Mm-hmm. But I could not find a job. Could not in Columbia. Now, this was right pre-civil rights riots. Mm-hmm. We were there. And we had a little apartment in over a garage. And it was kind of like it was almost up in the treetops. And on this particular day, I knew that if I could not find a job, I would have to go back home because we couldn't make it on draftee's salary. And I walked out onto this little landing, and it was, like I said, in the treetops, and the birds, it was a beautiful, beautiful day. There was birds all around me, and I was just reminded of the scripture passage that talked about how the lilies of the field and Solomon in all his glory, and the birds of the air, and how God takes care of them, and they just are beautiful and cared for by God. And I thought, well, it also says that we are greater than that, and God will also take care of us. And I did find a job. Within the next 2 days, I had a job, and we were able to stay. Now, that job was in a county hospital, and I worked in a premature nursery that basically was full of little black babies, premature babies. because they were the poorest of the poor, and they really could not and did not get good prenatal care. So they delivered early, and their babies, you know, there was many babies there. But my coworker was a black girl. And on this particular day, we were assigned to go to lunch at the same time. So I said, well, okay, let's go to lunch together. So we went downstairs. I noticed she kind of looked at me. So we got down to the cafeteria, and I said, okay, where do you want to sit? And she looked at me and said, I cannot eat lunch with you. Why? Because you eat lunch on that side, and I go on this side. And I said, well, I'll go with you. No, you can't. Why? Because you're white and I'm black. And it just struck me. I thought, this is so unfair. But it was the way I had to do things. And I think that that's influenced me, you know, that people, just because of the way they are, oftentimes treated so unfairly. And that has probably been the two things that really affected my thinking.
Okay. So, from 1998 until the present, then, and those two things have figured prominently in your thinking. For your life from that point on, correct?
Right. For my reason for living, my reason for my faith.
Mm-hmm. So when you came to Glory Day, have there been any significant events or things that have happened to cause you to think a different way about Gloria Day? Because, I mean, it suited, it kind of had the same, it fit your needs or your expectations for what the church was to be in its role in society when you came here, right? Or
I think it evolved that way. I think one of the things that really influenced me to come here, too, was because the pastor was very supportive of us as parents of a gay young man.
Mm.
And he was very caring about it. And at the time we came here, we had just found out that our son was gay. And his support and his caring, of course, was was very touching. And the people accepted us. They have never been unkind toward us, where other people who have had gay children felt sometimes faced some real persecution and bad mouthing and rejection, but we never have at Gloria Day. They've been very caring, and I know there are other gay people that are members of this congregation,
mm-hmm.
and they fit in, and Gloria Day had a very, very good social outreach,
mm-hmm.
And did do a lot to help poor and homeless and needy people, and that, of course, influenced our decision to come here, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I guess following up on the heels of that, then the developments in the ELC as within the past several months, actually
last August,
how has that affected your position? Seeing that Glory Day is a member of the ELCA, excuse me, and I'm originally coming here from a social justice perspective, perceiving that the Church of Glory Day fits, you know. Is actively reaching out to help people, and it was very receptive to your children being one of your children being homosexual and things of this nature. How do you perceive in your opinion, how is the role of the church changing, or Glory Day or its membership within the ELCA or the ELCA in general? How is that changing? Is it going down the right path in your perspective? And where do you see the church heading?
Okay, I'll go back to when we joined here and we were facing or dealing with the fact that our son was gay. We went to a seminar in Salina that was conducted by a former bishop of the ELCA whose adoptive son was gay, and as a result of being different, had hung himself, taken his own life. And these parents then realized that being gay is not a choice. It's the way that young man was. And so they became very much advocates for the rights of gay people. And we went to hear him and listen to him. And in the course of that seminar, there was other talk about enlightenment of Scripture, in particular the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, which had always been a very condemning story as far as homosexuality. And out of that came the point of view based upon new understandings of ancient Scripture, that it was not so much gay people who are homosexual by birth, but those who are heterosexual and choose to use homosexual behavior in a way to abuse and dominate people that came into their city, Sodom and Gomorrah. And I thought, you know, that's really a new thought for me. But then I had to realize that I never really felt that homosexual was a great evil, and that people who were gay were on a straight path to hell. I never really ever felt that way. And of course, once I learned our son was gay, I felt that perhaps that was a thinking in the back of my mind watching him grow up. And I never, you know, had that negative feeling about it. And as the ELC grew and year by year took on this sexuality study, and I read papers and information that came out of that, I came to understand that they probably would eventually come to accept homosexuality not as an unforgivable sin, but perhaps as a result of the imperfection in our world. All of us bear that imperfection because we are all sinful people. We live in an imperfect world, and the result of that affects people many different ways. Why would it not also affect genetics? If it can affect your mentality, your physical. And I was surprised, though, that the ELCA reached that level as soon as they did. I thought it probably would be maybe in my grandchildren's lifetime or in great-grandchildren's lifetime. So I was really surprised, and I'm glad. I am glad that has come about, even though the way I grew up as a Lutheran, my father was against homosexuals. So that was something I grew up with. And yet, as an adult, it was not something I really adhered to, that it was such a great sin. And I'm sorry, I'm really, really sorry to see the church divided over that issue, because who's to say that the Spirit didn't move at that convention, that gathering? Prayers were said for that, so why would it not happen? I'm just really glad to see that they are in that direction. I think it's right. I think division is wrong.
So with the ELCA voting then to the ELCA being... the Evangelical Lutheran Churches of America, the large organized group of Lutheran churches, voting to permit openly homosexual clergy who are celibate, correct? Or
no, in a committed lifelong relationship.
In a committed relationship with those with homosexual people who are in a committed monogamous relationship to be ordained as clergy, and with the ELCA voting that to be permissible. As you said before, there's been a huge division because there's a large, a sizable group of congregations who disagree with that. And this has obviously recently come to pass in the last few months, in August, it being now December of 2009. Where do you perceive the church as heading in the next 2 years, in the next decade? How do you think the church will function under this new idea? And do you think that the church will eventually, there will be a schism of some sort?
Well, I definitely think the danger is there, a permanent separation. But we also must trust God to work his will. And I know division is not his will. That I firmly believe. But as human beings, sometimes we don't do what God wills. But I think the ELCA will continue to be a strong part. I think some of the congregations that are looking at separation will not do that. At least I'm certainly praying that won't happen. Of course, who knows the future but the Lord? But we do know what the Lord wants. That we can know, not separation. And so I think it's going to be divided for a while. Mm-hmm. But how long, I don't know. I don't know.
So this is kind of a specific question going back to the past. In the 70s, you were in Wichita, correct?
Yes.
And you were a member of St. Paul's in Wichita?
Yes, I would be in St. Paul's.
Mm-hmm. Just a question specifically about Lutheranism and just the general religious climate of Wichita in general at that time. What were the reactions of religious communities to the Vietnam conflict? How was St. Paul? How did the general populace of St. Paul's react? And were there peace churches, or was the religious community pretty much in support of the conflict, or was there any opinion at all on the issue?
I don't recall that there was anything really dramatic in Wichita. Now, other churches I can't really speak for, but the Lutheran Church has always been supportive of government, mm-hmm. always been supportive of the president and the people who are in leadership position. And I think they supported the cause, because I don't recall that there was any big dramatic parades against it or anything. Mm-hmm. They reported that from places around in the country, but I don't recall anything from here.
And sorry, same question for World War II. I know you were 9 years old, thereabouts, when it ended.
Yes, would have been about that.
Do you remember anything specifically about that, or
about the war itself?
Well, about people's reactions here.
Well, reactions to the war, of course, again, was very, very supportive, mm-hmm. and I remember ration cards and rationing stamps and getting so much meat and so much cheese. And, of course, we lived on a farm, so we really didn't worry too much about food. So much sugar. And when it ended, there was a lot of celebration, even in our little community. Mm-hmm. I do remember that, but I don't remember too much else in detail.
Returning to contemporary times, How does the Lutheran Church, or even specifically Glory Day, perceive itself in relation to other Christian bodies, such as, you know, Methodists, Catholics, etc., as well as other religious groups, Buddhists, Muslims, if I can generalize in that respect?
Yeah. I think much more ecumenical now. Of course, we've just been through this big thing of ecumenism being the catchphrase within the church bodies.
Yeah.
I think we're much more accepting, mm-hmm. even of different Christian churches than we used to be. And while we tolerate those who are not of the Christian faith, and oftentimes I think we tolerate to a fault, mm-hmm. because we're afraid to hurt people's feelings sometimes, we still are able to say they're wrong. They're wrong. But, you know, Lutherans are not known for being out beating the drum, knocking on the doors. Mm-hmm. We've never done that, but we've always strived to live our life as the witness and let that speak, because we always felt actions speak louder than words. And I guess in a way, even though we don't say that's part of our creed, I think in a way it is. Mm-hmm. And we're just not one to go out there, not even wave the flag. You know, we're pretty quiet.
Gosh. Well, I think that's about all the major questions I have. Well, are there any other interesting stories, anecdotes pertaining to your personal history or your religious perspectives or your involvement in religion that you'd like to share? Or are there any interesting characters that you've run into over the years in religious communities or whatnot in Kansas?
I really can't think of any particular. My father has been the big example of a Christian person in my life. Mm-hmm. He was very staunch in his faith, and he wasn't radical by any means, unless you think the fact that we couldn't play cards or dance is radical. I suppose in a way it is, but that didn't affect me in any negative way. I learned to dance and I love to play cards. But I think being a Lutheran has evolved a lot. And of course, with the changes in the Lutheran Church, and I don't find change a negative thing. It hasn't been real radical until the August Assembly vote. That's pretty radical, but it was coming, and it just came sooner than I thought it would. As far as any characters, I can't really think of any that stand out in my mind in a positive way. I can think of some negative ones, but we won't discuss those.
All right.
No, unless you have any other questions, I think we pretty much covered.
That's about it.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.